Good morning and welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. I am your lucky board rep, Amy Johnson, this morning. Welcome on this beautiful November, almost May-like day. I see some of you in shorts and t-shirts. You're awfully brave this morning. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities, so please read them listed in your order of service. Linda from the Ministerial Search Committee would like to come up and make an announcement.
Good morning. Today at 11:45, we're going to have right here a little mini session, I would call it, for anyone who is interested and wants to view. We create a packet that the people that are thinking of joining us as a minister would get to view. And it is information about us, the congregation, some details of the survey, and we've created, it used to be a paper packet you would make copies and send out. We've created an online site for them to go to, and several people have expressed interest of just curious to see what it is. So it'll be a one-time event, so don't miss it today at 11:45, and it'll be right here. We'll just pull down the screen, and we'll walk you through the site. So hopefully you can join us.
LCUUC is also sponsoring a bag, a blanket, and a bear this holiday season to benefit children in the foster care system. So if you'd like to help, please read the announcement about it in the order of service and take a tag off the tree. I'd like to invite you to greet those sitting around you this morning. Good morning.
Good morning again.
I like how your glasses match your shirt. Do you have many different glasses?
I don't wear my glasses very often. I tend to not want to wear mine. So, if you are visiting us this morning, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger out in the foyer. And there's a variety of information available on the table about our church and Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to anything that interests you. I will be in the social hall after the service to answer any questions that you might have about our church. Or if you've been visiting for a while and you'd like information about becoming a member, I'd be happy to talk with you about that as well. If you are visiting with your children, it's our custom for our children to remain in the service until after the story for all ages, at which time they'll go to the religious education classes, and you are welcome to join them there. The nursery is just out the doors to my right, so you are welcome to take your children out at any time for that. Classes end at 11:15, so please allow your children time to stay within their classes until after that is done. And we always enjoy getting to know our guests, so if you are a guest and feel comfortable standing up and introducing yourself, we'd invite you to do so. Okay. In the back, come on up. Hi. Welcome. Everybody's invited to gather in the social. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting too excited. Okay, go ahead. Welcome, Rick. Welcome. Anybody else? Okay. Okay. Welcome. Excited to have you. Welcome. Wonderful. Lots of guests today. We invite you to gather in the social hall, particularly those guests. Hopefully you can meet some new and old faces that you already know. It's a good place to gather for some more discussion in that. Please put your cell phones on silence mode at this point, and I hope you find this morning's service enlightening and interesting. Our guest speaker today is the Reverend Scott Prinster. He is currently writing his dissertation at the University of Wisconsin on the historical relationship between religion and science in the United States. He has served congregations in Southwest Michigan and in Madison, as well as teaching English for 2 years at the Unitarian Seminary in Transylvania. Very interesting. No vampires, right? You're okay, yeah. Before attending seminary, his background was in physics, and he worked as a NASA contractor for the space program. He is constantly trying to make time to play old-time music with his fiddle and banjo, and we know him for his bear friend that he... Did you bring him today? Oh, I'm sad. Okay. Next time. So welcome.
Thank you, choir. That was lovely. Well, good morning. It's wonderful to see you all again. Our reading this morning is from the Passover Haggadah, the order of service that celebrates the Jewish liberation from literal and spiritual slavery. It is a springtime celebration, but with the weather, I simply couldn't resist. And as you'll see, it's a sentiment that knows no season. So as Aaron lights the chalice, I share with you these words. May the light we now kindle inspire us to use our powers to heal and not to harm, to help and not to hinder, to bless and not to curse, to serve you, Spirit of Freedom. I'd like to invite you to rise as you're able and join in singing together our opening hymn, number 159 in your gray hymn book, This Is My Song. While you're standing, I'd like to invite you to read the congregational ingathering from your order of service. We come together this morning to remind one another to rest for a moment on the forming edge of our lives, to resist the headlong tumble into the next moment, until we claim for ourselves awareness and gratitude, taking the time to look into one another's faces and see their communion, the reflection of our own eyes. This house of laughter and silence, memory and hope, is hallowed by our presence together. Thank you. Would you please be seated?
All right, whoa. If the children could come up for the story for all ages, please. We're going to do a little skit for you. So our middle schoolers are off visiting another church this morning, so we have a few less kids here. So I got some high schoolers to help out with the story. And I'm sorry about Fudgy Bear. We all really look forward to having Fudgy Bear. But we're kicking off the Guest at Your Table program today, so we're doing a story that's from one of the classroom lesson plans, and we're sharing it with you this morning. And we're not going to use the mic, so hopefully you can all hear us.
I'm going to read you a story that may remind you of another story you've heard before. Once on an island, far to the east, or maybe to the west,
This one won't last any longer. She stamped her feet and shouted, "House, earth shake, house break." The earth shook and the house shuddered. The paint snapped and the walls leaned over. The earthquake got laughed. Ha 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 ha! The two sisters got out quickly and ran to their sister's house to move. But soon the earthquake god arrived there. Still? Another? But this one was weakest of all. She stamped and shouted, "Earth shake, house break." Earth shook and the house swayed. The cord strained and the bamboo wobbled. Then it sprang back straight. Earthquake god frowned. She stamped harder.
So perhaps this story reminds you of another one. Does it remind you guys of a different story? Paul? Which one? The three bears? Or what does it remind you of, Jade? Or the three little pigs? Mm-hmm. In the three little pigs story, the strongest house was made of bricks. But in some places where there are earthquakes, houses are stronger if they're made of materials that are more flexible.
A few years ago, there was a very big earthquake in a country called Haiti. There were a lot of people and groups that went there to help the people in that country rebuild after many of their homes were destroyed. They still need a lot of help there.
And there's an organization run by UUs, like us, that is helping people in Haiti. It's called the UU Service Committee. They are working with a group of in Haiti that is coming up with new ways of doing things and solving problems and helping the Haitian people learn to do these new things for themselves. The UU Service Committee works with groups all over the world to help people who need it.
Our church is starting a campaign today to raise money for that organization. That it's called the Guest at Your Table program. And to kick it off, we will be asking each family here today to take home a box and a booklet that contains stories of hope.
The stories of hope will help us learn about the UU Service Committee and what work they do. We'll ask families to leave the box on their table the next few weeks and read stories about people doing human rights work. As you learn about these people, consider them as guests at your table. Consider putting some money in the box as if sharing with these guests. Then we'll ask you to bring your boxes back in a few weeks and we'll send the money we raise to the UU Service Committee so they can continue helping people who need it.
And now for the connection and reflection, Stacy will come up.
Oh, good morning. I'm nervous being up here, sorry. So Barbara Howell talked me into giving a little, I'm not even sure what the topic is supposed to be, but I think it's why I became a UU or why I'm here at this church. That sounds like what you'd like to hear. Okay, then that's what I will say today. I had told her that I'm not much for writing and giving talks and stuff, so she suggested that maybe I just write a bulleted list. That's what I'm good at, bulleted lists of why I'm a UU or why I'm here. And as I started writing my bulleted list, I realized that it wasn't about things. Why I'm a UU isn't about things or about activities that I've done or things that I could put in a such a concise list, but it was more about people that have influenced my journey along the way. So I guess I do have sort of a list, but it's a list of people, not a list of reasons. I would like to start with just saying that I was raised Lutheran in the Missouri Synod, so a rather conservative Christian background. And that definitely has influenced my whole life. I'll say that I enjoyed being in the church, that I think, unlike a lot of people who find a more liberal religion along the way, I don't have any resentments or regrets about being raised Lutheran. I have wonderful memories of the community that I was part of and just the wonderful people that I met along the way there. But I do have some reflections from back in that time when I was very young. I remember four people, actually. One named Todd Christensen. He was a boy who sat in class in front of me, and he was Jewish. And I also babysat for some Jewish children. And I remember as a very young child feeling this pity and sadness for these Jewish children who weren't going to get to go to heaven, which was that influence that I had from my Lutheran background. And I think that I didn't realize it then, but later on I realized that I didn't want religion. I didn't think religion and spirituality should make someone feel sad and pity these wonderful people who I had in my life. So that was an important, those young people were important in my upbringing. And then I met someone named Dane Sanderson, and he was a friend of mine in middle school and high school. I remember having some talks with him about religion, and he told me that he belonged to this church where in Sunday school they learned about all these different world religions. And they didn't just learn about Christianity, and they learned about Buddhism and Hinduism and all of these philosophies, and that they believe that they all had this wonderful lesson to share. And to me that was blasphemy coming from a Lutheran church, because if you don't believe in Jesus Christ as your ultimate Savior, you go to hell. And so to be going to a church where they taught you all of these different world religions just seems like they were setting you up for hell, and I didn't quite understand that. But it seemed like kind of cool, and he was so proud of it and great, happy to share it. Dane was then still a friend of mine in college, where I met another person who really influenced my thoughts on religion and spirituality. Her name was Monica. She was my lab partner in biology, and she was Hindu, and that was my first experience with somebody in kind of a drastically different religion. Obviously, I knew Jewish people, and I knew Christians and Catholics, but to meet somebody from a very different religion and to hear her philosophy on life and how it related to Christianity and spirituality was very interesting. And she told me that her thoughts were that the Hindu religion had all these different deities, and all of those different deities were different ways that you could connect to the ultimate supreme being, that everybody kind of found one of those deities that really connected to them and gave them meaning and gave them just a way to connect to something bigger. And in her thoughts, Jesus was just another one of those deities and another way that you could connect with the supreme being and that ultimate goodness of the universe. And I thought, wow, that's just so open-minded. And it really was the spark of having this open-minded acceptance in religion for me. And then I went on to find yoga in my life, and I can attribute that to my friend Natalie Weisong, who was my first yoga instructor. We went to lots of yoga conventions and studied together, and I learned that yoga is more than just the physical aspects. But once I really started delving into the philosophy, I thought, this is for me. This is what I want. I want something philosophical that can help me connect to myself, to learn myself better, and in turn get to know everybody better and be connected to something bigger than myself. I mentioned that to a friend named Lisa, who introduced me to kirtan, which I had never heard of before, but she's like, I can't believe that you do yoga and you've never heard of kirtan. You've got to come with me. So I went to a kirtan in Shorewood at a Presbyterian church, a kirtan with Ragini. It's one of the Midwest's largest kirtan followings. And eventually that church could not handle the kirtan, so the kirtan moved to the UU church in Brookfield, which there is where I had my first, like, wow, I found pamphlets on UUism, and I'm like, wow, this exists. There's this, people kind of study philosophy, and they study all these different world religions, and they're accepting of all these different beliefs, and they're there to support you. I was just amazed that I think something I read that really struck me at first was that they were supporting truth, the search for truth and meaning in your own life, and I'm like, wow, they're not telling me what to believe. I could actually come here and figure it out for myself. So I did attend that church a number of times, and I agreed with the teachings of UUism, but I never felt at home there. So I went home and I did an internet search looking for other UU churches, and I found LCUUC. And I think it was quite fortuitous that I found it when I did, because I was searching over the summer, and there aren't many summer sessions. Thank you, what I'm looking for, at this church. And I happened to find it the week of one of your summer meetings. So I was able to come with my family. Me and my kids came. And I just remember walking in the door and being so warmly greeted. And it kind of was that feeling of coming home again. There were just so many wonderful people, and everybody made sure I felt really comfortable. They made sure that my children were comfortable, and they went off to a joint RIE experience and had a wonderful time. By this point, I've been touched by so many people in this congregation. I couldn't possibly name them all, but I'm going to just mention a few that were kind of instrumental in why I now am a member of LCUUC. I did one of the member informational sessions with Yvonne, and I remember just her talking about the openness in this congregation, and kind of actually a reminder to people in the congregation that while many of you share some very of the same liberal political views, that not everybody does. And so I'm going to thank everyone who did not egg my car when I drove in with Scott Walker bumper stickers on. And I know some of you have mentioned to that, you know, kind of made comments to me after. But yes, for the first year I came here, I was actually able to drive my car and park it in this lot without getting egged or scratched or anything like that. So I appreciate that. And I actually, that was an experience that I had at the other UU church, was that there was so much political talk that I felt kind of ostracized. And so to be able to come here, and I know that we don't all share those views, but to know that I'm still accepted, or maybe you didn't know, now maybe I won't be accepted anymore, I'm not sure. But hopefully I'll still be accepted after I've admitted that I have some more conservative political views. And then, of course, I have to thank Al, because Al is just such a wonderful cheerleader, and he's just so welcoming, and he's been welcoming to not only me, but any guests that I've brought. Every guest that I've brought has also been greeted by Al, and it just feels very wonderful, like someone in my family is, you know, coming along to meet my friends, and that's very cool. And then just kind of wrapping things up, coming back to some of the wonderful influence that I had from my original church, my Lutheran church growing up. The reason why I was seeking a church was for my children, for my family. And, you know, you go through those single years, those early years without children in your life, and maybe church doesn't seem that important, or this community doesn't seem that important. But now that I have children and now that I found this home, I feel so well supported. I feel my children have just made friends. I asked Reagan, what should I say in this speech? And she said, say that, you know, we come here because we've met friends, and we just feel like family here, and we love to be here. So kind of full circle, I have found my new community, and that's why I belong to LCUUC. Thank you.
Thank you, Stacy. Now I'd like to invite you into a time of meditation, reflection, and prayer, a time for us to set aside all of the busyness in our lives, all of the concerns that pull us away from our center, all of the distractions and preconceptions that prevent us from being fully present with one another this morning. Breathing and relaxing, we feel ourselves opening to the safe and respectful space that we have created together. Breathing and relaxing, I call your attention to the spot in the center of your chest, a place I call the heart center. And imagine your breath flowing in and out of that heart center, opening it to the world around us. So often this tender and sensitive spot is kept shielded from the world and the things which might cause us pain. But breathing and relaxing makes our heart center as flexible and strong as the bamboo, better able to withstand the buffeting of the experiences of our lives. And so in a time of silence, I invite you to continue breathing and opening that heart center, that we might trust this place and these people with this tender and vulnerable spot. Spirit of life and love, whom we know by many names, we give thanks for this day. We think with care for those near and far who matter to us, even those whom we do not know, but who we know are going through a time of suffering or brokenness. We strive to remain flexible and strong as our nation emerges from such a time of hardness and division. May we carry our tenderness toward the outside, facing it to those who need a kinder society, to those who hunger for a caring word or a reassuring touch. May the struggles of our lives not drive us to hardness and bitterness, but to this sensitivity and softness. For all of these possibilities, and for this moment to pause in the midst of our busy lives and give thanks for what matters most to us, this morning we are grateful. Blessed be, and amen. Now I invite you to sing from your seats our next hymn, number 89 in your gray hymn book, Come My Way, My Truth, My Life.
Such a heart as joy.
Our reading this morning is from one of my very favorite works, from my very favorite spiritual guide, The Places That Scare You by Buddhist nun Pema Chodron. I have nothing but praise for Pema's work, and this book in particular has been one for me in which it's so clearly about me that I continually have to put it down and catch my breath before I continue. And so from this book, Pema Chodron writes, "We can let the circumstances of our lives harden us so that we become increasingly resentful and afraid, or we can let them soften us and make us kinder and more open to what scares us. We always have this choice. Although the Buddhist concept of bodhicitta is often translated enlightened mind, it might be better understood as the rawness of a broken heart. Sometimes this broken heart gives birth to anxiety and panic, sometimes to anger, resentment, and blame. But under the hardness of that armor, there is the tenderness of genuine sadness. It can humble us when we're arrogant and soften us when we're unkind. It can humble us and soften us and awaken us when we prefer to sleep, and it pierces through our indifference. Even ordinary people like us, with hang-ups and confusion, have this mind of enlightenment." A young woman wrote to me about finding herself in a small town in the Middle East, surrounded by people jeering, yelling, and threatening to throw stones at her and her friend because they were Americans. Of course, she was terrified, but what happened to her in this moment is interesting. Suddenly, she identified with every person throughout history who had ever been scorned and hated. Something cracked wide open, and she stood in the shoes of millions of oppressed people and saw with a new perspective. She even understood her shared humanity with those who hated her. This sense of deep connection, of belonging to the same family, is bodhicitta. In our modern fascination with novelty, our pursuit of the freshest news and the latest model of the newest technology, it's easy to forget the wisdom that we already have access to. We are so fortunate to live in a time where there is so much high-quality spiritual and religious writing available to us. For example, scholar Karen Armstrong is already familiar to many Unitarian Universalists for her finely researched and engaging books such as The Battle for God, about the phenomenon of fundamentalism within Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. With an unusual opportunity from TED, a global network of creative thinkers committed to improving our world, Armstrong is promoting a movement that she hopes will help transform the human condition. She was also the speaker at the prestigious Ware Lecture at our denomination's annual General Assembly a year and a half ago, and the thousands of Unitarian Universalists in attendance, if you can imagine that, were very enthusiastic about her message. Armstrong was raised in an Irish family living in England, entered a convent at the age of 17, and became a nun. After several very unhappy years, trying to reconcile her love of learning with her religious order's demand for obedience, she left professional religious life to become a teacher. She was later commissioned to write a television documentary about the life of the Christian leader Paul, traveled to the Middle East and became fascinated with the history and the interrelatedness of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. This and other experiences as a scholar and writer rekindled her passion in the world's religions, but she returned to the subject as one who, like many of us, I think, thought of herself as spiritual, but not religious in the traditional sense. It is perhaps for this reason that her writing appeals to so many of us. She balances a fascination with the religious impulse without needing to defend any one tradition as the only legitimate answer. When she first began a serious study of the different religious traditions, Armstrong was surprised to recognize that the emphasis we see today on conforming with rigid dogma was really a preoccupation only in the Western world, and only very recently at that. For example, she explains that the Quran dismisses this obsession with doctrine as, quote, self-indulgent guesswork that makes people quarrelsome and stupidly sectarian, end quote. And she notes that in 17th century Europe, the word belief still reflected its shared roots with beloved. It still meant to cherish or hold dear. In a similar manner, the word credo had not yet gained its dogmatic overtones, but still expressed the roots it shares with cardio, in the sense of setting one's heart upon some cherished value. I know from my own research that by the 19th century, the meaning of the words credo and belief had undergone a profound shift from a stance of heartfelt trust in the world to intellectual agreement with a theological doctrine. Armstrong's research has uncovered the shared historical heart of the world's religions. At the core of all religious, ethical, and spiritual traditions, she says, lies the principle of compassion, calling us to treat all others as we wish to be treated ourselves. In each of the major world religions, Armstrong has noted similar commands to cultivate a relationship with the world in which we feel with others, finding joy in their joy, feeling pain in their pain. Whatever their particular image of God or of the religious life, each of these movements has taught that it is through compassion that we truly experience the presence of the divine. In particular, the ethic of compassion in each of these religions is expressed in the form commonly called the Golden Rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And this rule has a long, long history. Armstrong tells the story of a pagan who once came to visit the Rabbi Hillel, who lived in Jerusalem at about the time of Jesus. The pagan offered to convert to Judaism if Hillel could recite the whole of Jewish teaching while standing on one leg. This is what the life of ministry looks like sometimes. Hillel stood on one leg and recited, "That which is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor. The rest is commentary. Now go and study it." Not only was compassion prominently expressed in all the religious scriptures, but the Rabbi Meir, who lived two centuries after Hillel, insisted that any reading of these holy texts that led to hatred or disdain of other people was an illegitimate interpretation. Even in those ancient times, when the world's major religions were still being established, we were already aware of our temptation to fall into disconnectedness and neglect of one another, and how easily we could allow our most vulnerable to fall through the cracks. The religious ethic of compassion was developed with the intention of requiring deep connections with others, even those whose lives are so different from our own. Given this historical knowledge, it's not surprising that Armstrong criticizes modern dogmatism as the illegitimate hijacking of religion, and she condemns the use of religious language to justify violent deeds and hateful thoughts. On her global travels, she regularly meets people who single out religion as the primary cause of the world's problems, and she's quick to correct them, that these conflicts have usually been fought over political ambition, greed, and envy, which are given a veneer of religious language to sanitize their true motives. She points out that one of the factors contributing to these conflicts around the world, the conflicts disguised as religious concerns, is the widespread existence of a particular kind of religious illiteracy in which the ethical life is replaced with an emphasis on right belief, a concern for being right over being compassionate. As pervasive as this abuse of religious ideals seems, Armstrong reports that she's also seeing on her global travels that many people share her desire to transform this situation. She's often asked what ordinary people like us can do to tip the world's responses back in the direction of compassion, to help make it possible again for religion to serve the cause of harmony rather than division. Every year, the TED Network of conferences awards one innovator a prize of $100,000, as well as the use of its considerable resources and community to grant them one wish to change the world for the better. Karen Armstrong was awarded the TED Prize in 2008, and she used her opportunity to develop the Charter for Compassion, a statement of universal justice and respect written collaboratively by the leading inspirational leaders in Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. The TED Network has developed videos, websites, and workshops to help promote this manifesto and the role of religion as one important voice of compassion. Armstrong speaks of her project with great urgency, believing that if we do not seriously address the barriers to living as a peaceful global society, there may not be a civilization to hand down to the future generations. And it was very important for me to recognize that she's explicitly not talking about a cartoonish spirit of love that wafts over us and magically transforms our conflicted world. She describes the movement as a lifelong practice that will not happen if we do not make it happen. The Charter recognizes that the principle of compassion lies at the heart of all major religious, ethical, and spiritual traditions. It calls us to avoid, both in private and publicly, inflicting pain on others, in thought, word, and deed. Although every one of us has regularly fallen short in expressing our most compassionate self, we are invited to join with other seekers everywhere to restore compassion to the center of what it means to be spiritual and what it means to be religious. For we can see how this work is essential to our own journey and to the possibility of a world made whole again through justice and peace. If we are to take the issue of compassion completely seriously, then I believe that we also need to seriously consider the objections to Armstrong's project. Part of what Armstrong produced as a part of her TED project was the marvelous book, 12 Steps to a Compassionate Life, which is structured in a way that gives you very manageable lessons that are great for covenant groups and RE classes and discussions. One common criticism that she acknowledges in this book is that the promotion of compassion seems to many people to suggest that we have to tolerate unkindness and allow injustice to continue its destructive work. My colleague, the Reverend Dottie Matthews, over in Appleton, wisely notes that the golden rule does not call us to treat others as we have been treated. This eye for an eye ethic is an unhealthy model of relationship in which we may treat others unkindly if we have a good enough excuse. Martin Luther King observed in his Nobel Prize acceptance speech that we must, quote, evolve for all human conflict, a method which rejects revenge, aggression, and retaliation. We don't doubt Dr. King's rejection of racism and commitment to justice, and yet notice that he too calls us to insist on a stance toward the world which is committed to healing rather than retaliation. Armstrong, well, what about practical objections? Armstrong wonders, perhaps it's just not realistic to think that we can extend compassion to people who have been unkind to us. Certainly there are those to whom we can realistically offer compassion, people for whom it's easy to imagine it being compassionate. But isn't it really just self-defense to strike back at the Tea Partiers or the racists or whoever else is contributing to mean-spiritedness and conflict in the world? Isn't that just a reasonable response? Armstrong isn't promising us that it will be easy, only that it's critically important. She acknowledges how, for many of us, it is much more appealing to be right or self-righteous than it is to be compassionate. And it's clear that the long-ago prophets of the world's religions understood this inclination. As their tribes and clans encountered one another with increasing frequency and violence, these leaders were explicit that this vision would not work if we only extended compassion to those who were just like us. Armstrong urges in her spiritual biography, The Spiral Staircase, quote, you must not practice the spirituality of empathy simply in order to get something back for yourself. You have to be prepared to extend your compassionate interest even when there is no hope of return. Another concern commonly voiced about Armstrong's project is how easily we confuse other states with compassion. Pema Chodron explains that every spiritual virtue has competing values that she calls the near enemy and the far enemy. The near enemy of a virtue is something that masquerades as that quality and distracts us from pursuing it in its true form. One near enemy of compassion is pity. Treating those who suffer as poor, unfortunate, whose lives have nothing to do with our own, but who might be rescued through an act of noble generosity on our part. Another near enemy of compassion is the sickly sweet niceness that reassures us that we are good people and absolves us of any responsibility to go deeper. Notice that in neither of these near enemies do we ever actually open our tender heart and feel with others. We only play act as if we do. The far enemy of a virtue is its true opposite. For compassion, the true opposite is not so much cruelty or malice, because, again, this implies that compassion is merely niceness. I believe that the true opposite of compassion is, in fact, indifference. Failing to care not only for other individuals, but toward life in general. The pursuit of genuine compassion means avoiding both kinds of enemies. Lastly, I want to address the objection that maybe Armstrong is painting too rosy a picture about religion and compassion. Colleagues of mine have pointed out that religious people are not always compassionate, and that leaders regularly misuse religious language to justify our hurtful treatment of others. This raises for me the larger question of the misuse of religious values. And I have to acknowledge the ways in which I've seen the values of Unitarian Universalism used to justify our radical disconnectedness from one another, to rationalize our class privilege and our sense of comfortable entitlement, and to reduce the whole of religious experience and all of its expressions down to a sterile intellectualism. I feel clear that these are not what Unitarian Universalism is essentially about, but I also have to admit that if the reality of religion is how we actually practice it, then our practice is inescapably human and fallible, of course, just like we are. We will fall short in our practice of compassion. We will struggle profoundly with it if we really take it seriously. And hardest of all, we will have to return again and again to the practice each time after we have disappointed ourselves and others. You've probably realized by now that what Armstrong is calling us to consider is not a mere cosmetic change to our lives, but a fundamental transformation in our relationship with the world. And after a lifetime of learning one set of behaviors, we're going to need a lifetime of striving to be able to develop another set of responses. The goal is not to think of compassion as our daily good deed, a moment of niceness accomplished so that we can check it off our list and return to our habitual disconnectedness. Instead, the practice of the Golden Rule reshapes us into a new relationship with the world and with ourselves. I call this a spiritual practice because I have to practice it every day. I constantly fall short of who I want to be, but I also want not ever to give up on that vision that I might be able to bring that best and tenderest self to the world. Armstrong reassures us that this compassion is, quote, a lifelong project. It is not achieved in an hour or a day. It is a struggle that will last until our dying hour. Therefore, this sermon is only the beginning of what I hope will be a much longer conversation and journey. I believe that there is no better cause for which we could pour out our lives in the service of goodness. So let us begin the journey together. May it be so. And I always look forward to welcoming your voices, your thoughts and questions into this conversation. I always love hanging around at coffee hour and having coffee and sharing conversation with you, but now is a moment in which we invite your questions and comments. Our ushers are wandering about with handheld microphones, so if you raise your hand, they will come to you Donahue style and invite you into this dialogue.
Hi, I'm Chris. As I was listening to you speaking today, I was recalling a conversation we had over dinner with some friends last night who are Lutheran. We were talking about having to get up and go to church tomorrow, and we're new members here. And so we explained, you know, they kind of asked about this Unitarian Universalism thing. And luckily we had our little card that explains the principles of Unitarian Universalism. And of course we were kind of awaiting the question about, you know, well, where does this Jesus fit in? Because right. I was raised, you know, Catholic, and right. There's always that question lurking out there. And then in my mind, I was kind of drawn back to the conversation we had with Al, actually, the evening that we sat here and talked about our membership and how this particular building is very humble in an area that is quite affluent, and there's a lot of, commerce in this area and things like that. And then I have a background in religious studies, and I think back to what Christianity actually was when it began, and it was an intentional community with folks in the midst of a lot of differences in lifestyle and political upheaval. And I guess it occurred to me that this particular place is really an intentional community with, I guess, the intention of being more compassionate in the world. So it affirmed our membership in coming here. So
that's wonderful. One of the phrases we used to make more use of back in the 60s and 70s was that Unitarian Universalism is the religion of Jesus rather than a religion about Jesus. And I love that idea that when someone from my many, many Christian friends and family asks me about the Christian connection, where is Jesus in all this? I say we try very hard to keep alive and real in our lives the values of Jesus. And for me, that humility and that authenticity that you mentioned is so central to who I hope that we are. So thank you, Chris. That's wonderful. Uh-oh, they're each requesting a microphone. This may be trouble.
Thanks, Scott. Really enjoyed the sermon. Love Karen Armstrong and TED Talks, actually, too. And just for everyone's information, I'm sure that's available if you go to TED Talks
yes.
on Google. You can Google TED Talks, Google Karen Armstrong, and you'll
Absolutely.
Come up with her 20-minute, probably.
And there are a few of them from her.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They love her work.
Yeah. Yes. And it would be actually maybe nice to do another book group or something with her book on compassion and the other one. And
it's an amazing time to be alive, isn't it? There's so much amazing reading, and I just don't have time. So, yes, absolutely. I would definitely recommend Karen Armstrong's talks on TED.org, I think. I don't think it's .com. It'll redirect you, but I think it's TED.org. Karen Armstrong's video is on there. Also, Karen Armstrong's video on UUA.org, the Unitarian Universalist Association's website, has the videotape of her Ware lecture. So she spoke to a UU audience, and you can see what she did with that opportunity. They're marvelous, inspiring lectures, and she's such a wonderful speaker and author.
Yeah. Thanks also, Scott. I also loved your sermon, and it's inspiring to me. The whole concept of compassion, I totally agree that we really have to work at that and make it central to our lives, One of the things I've often said when I teach RE or whatever is the secret to compassion is putting yourself in the other person's shoes. Mm-hmm. Whether it's that young terrorist from a Middle Eastern country that blows
right.
herself up.
Right.
Understand it. Really understand where she's coming from. Don't agree with it necessarily,
right.
but seek
right.
the compassion, the understanding of it, and the compassion flows. You kind of get it then.
That's an amazing practice. One of the reasons I really wanted to preach this sermon right now for you was I'm already thinking ahead to spending Thanksgiving with my family, and I'm already getting prickly and defensive in anticipation of that. And I don't know, and the election is definitely part of this. It's definitely triggered a side of me that is very much not my best self. My immature, defensive, argumentative side. And so I really struggle with that practice, especially when I'm with my conservative Christian family. That when I hear them say something to me that is hurtful, I don't imagine myself saying the words that they're saying, but I do imagine myself feeling the values that I know are behind their words. When my flaky evangelical aunt tells me that she's praying for my soul, I know that what she means is that she cares deeply for my welfare. And that's something that I can feel inside myself. And that, again, lets the shield fall away and lets the best, tenderest part of me sometimes come forward. So we are ready to move into coffee hour, so I really look forward to continuing the conversation with you there and allowing us to end on time, especially for those of you who have children. At this moment, our ushers will pass the baskets for the giving and receiving of the offertory. This beautiful yet humble building, this amazing community and all of its programs and activities have been made possible because of your generosity, your vision, and your kindness. And so what you give and do here does make a difference and is very deeply appreciated. Thank you. I'd like to invite you to turn to your order of service and join with me in saying together the congregational affirmation printed there. May the love which overcomes all differences, which heals all wounds, which puts to flight all fears, which reconciles all who are separated, be in us and among us now and always. I invite you to rise as you're able and join in singing together our closing hymn, number 6 in your gray hymn book, Just As Long As I Have Breath. Blessing of truth be upon us, the power of love direct us and sustain us, and may the peace of this community preserve our going out and coming in from this time forth until we meet again. Would you please be seated for the postlude?